Israel, Amrim Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light. This program comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's story, In Henry's Backyard, was written by Peter Lyon. John Larkin is the narrator, and featured in the role of Henry is Ralph Bell.
There is a little book, just 32 pages long, only 5 years old, which has won recognition as one of the most important books of our time. It is The Races of Mankind by two anthropologists, Dr. Gene Weltfish and the late Ruth Benedict. And the greatness of this little book is in its theme. The races of mankind are what the Bible says they are, created in the image of God, brothers, in their bodies, is the record of their brotherhood. Songs, ballads, other books, movies have been based on this little book. Today we have prepared a radio play written for the Thanksgiving season, and it is likewise based on the races of mankind. It's a fable that we want to tell, and the hero of this fable, if you could call him a hero, is a fellow called Henry White, a very typical type fellow.
I'm not so typical.
Of course, nobody likes to think he's typical. But we'll let you judge for yourself if maybe there isn't a little bit of you, and of me, in Henry White. Henry works for a living in an office.
The Prudential Guaranteed Mutual Providential Building and Loan Savings Association.
A reputable firm, I understand, and Henry works very hard there, trying, like us all, to make enough money so that he can keep a roof over his head. Henry's boss, the man in charge of Henry's department, is a man named Joe Burke.
That's me.
We'll hear more from Joe Burke in a few minutes. Henry, typically enough, is married. Wife, name of Mabel.
I'm Mabel.
And I would like to prove that Henry is really typical by reporting that he has 3.6 children, but he doesn't. He has only one child, a boy named Junior. Well, when Henry gets home from work in the evening, the first thing he does is take off his shoes. And the second thing he does is
Hey, Mabel, what'd you do with my slippers?
And then, of course, after dinner, Henry turns on the radio. His favorite programs are quiz shows, but, as he says,
Boy, are they dumb. Now, if I ever got on one of those shows, I'd come home rich.
Yes, Henry dreams of being rich, which is getting close to being typical, because he isn't rich, which is most certainly typical. Well, Henry, like all of us, has his problems. Like a couple of weeks ago, Mabel, that's his wife, she said to him,
Henry.
Hmm?
Oh, Henry, put down the paper a minute and listen to me.
Oh, sorry, hon. What's on your mind?
The landlord.
Oh, him.
Says he won't paint the apartment unless we pay more rent.
Well, at least he's consistent. That's what he said 2 months ago, too.
I wish you'd speak to him. Isn't there a law or something?
Start making trouble, he'll slip us an eviction notice or something.
He said there were plenty of people who would love to live in this apartment without paint. For more money than we pay. He said there was a long waiting list of people who just...
Those...
Censored.
We're just trying to get some more of his...
Censored.
...friends to move into this neighborhood.
Now, cut it out, Henry. Stop it. If you mean Negro or Chinese or Jew or Catholic, then say it. Stop using those nasty words about people who happen to be of different religions or races. Cut it out. I won't have it.
I forgot to mention that Henry has another typical habit. He uses too many nasty words. The kind of words that most insult and disgrace the humanity of the person who uses them. With Henry, the temptation to use words like that is always strongest when he feels put upon, when he's upset by some fancied grievance against the world in general. The next day, Henry was whistling as he cleaned the last papers off his desk at the end of the day. Just then, Joe Burke paused at Henry's desk. Remember Burke, Henry's boss?
Hi there, Henry.
Oh, hello, Mr. Burke.
Feeling pretty lively, aren't you?
Well, it's always good to look forward to the weekend, you know. Not that I don't enjoy the work, you understand, but...
No, just how you feel, Henry. Yeah, felt the same way myself this evening. Something in the air. Tell you what, why don't we stop off together and have a little drink on the way home?
A little drink? I never drink.
Well, come along. We'll have time for just one before I have to be home. Never keep the little woman waiting. Secret of domestic happiness, my boy.
Well, now this is more like it. Henry's feeling pretty good as he walks out with the boss, gets into the elevator with him, goes down to the street, walks along beside him, talking just as natural. Henry and Mr. Burke, buddies, pals. They find themselves a booth, sit down, light cigarettes, get into conversation about this and that, gossip about the office.
Yes, sir. Well, I'm afraid things are going to look a lot worse before they get any better.
Look worse, Mr. Burke?
The riffraff we have to do business with these days. Those
censored
up from the south, moving into our neighborhoods, crowding us, forcing us to move. The
censored
foreigners, crowding us out of our jobs.
Yes. It's terrible, all right.
Black, yellow, mongrel races, all kinds of religions. You and I, Henry, people like us who come of good, pure stock, we're being pushed around too much.
That's right, Mr. Burke.
Another drink.
I don't think so, thanks.
Just one more round. I tell you, Henry, after all, when you think about it, it's us who have the brains and the know-how. Am I right?
Yes, sir.
We got to stand together.
That's right.
Before it's too late. Before we're all mongrelized and the best of the human race disappears forever.
Well, it's not every day the boss buys you a couple of drinks and gets into serious, thoughtful-type discussion with you. Henry's feeling pretty well set up now as he heads home. Cocky, even. Now he's out on the street again, headed for his house, striding along, steps just a little bigger than usual. Right in the middle of the sidewalk, somebody coming along from the opposite direction, reading a newspaper, almost bumps into him.
Where do you think you're going?
Oh, sorry, mister.
Why'd you watch where you're going?
Well, excuse me, I was on my...
Stupid! You ought to stay down south where you belong.
Say, now listen here, mister.
There is, inside every one of us, a little green devil of prejudice and hate. Hate for what is different from ours and our way, whether of race, of religion, skin color, or way of speech. It was this little green devil inside Henry that prompted him to say what he said. The funny thing, now that Henry has been good and pugnacious, upholding his idea of how he's better because he's different, he doesn't feel better. Matter of fact, he feels worse. Doesn't realize it yet, though. All he realizes is that he's good and sore. So he just goes plowing along down the block until suddenly, whack, he bangs into somebody else.
Say, mister, you must be in a hurry.
So what?
Oh, so a fella can't even cross the sidewalk to go in his own house without being...
You live here? In this house?
That's right.
Well, why don't you go back where you came from?
Same green devil again. Well, now Henry's almost home. He's just said something he thinks is pretty clever. But do you think he's relishing it? Feeling that he's a pretty smart fellow, after all? Taking satisfaction in his quick wit? You'd think he would be. But all that's boiling up in old Henry is resentment, irritation, getting hotter under his collar every minute. Oh, and here he comes now, down the corridor. Careful, Henry. Temper, temper.
Where's that light switch?
Look out now, Henry. Oops. That was the umbrella stand. And what happens to the umbrella stand now? It gets a good kick from Henry's right foot.
No!
Logical result, of course.
I'll teach you to hurt my foot!
That was the lamp on the hall table. Score? One broken bulb, one broken vase. And, of course, by this time...
Henry! Henry, what's going on out there?
Never mind.
But I heard... Oh, Henry. Our new lamp.
Well, it's all the fault of those...
Censored.
And...
Censored.
If they'd stayed where they belong instead of coming around here...
What are you talking about?
Never mind what I'm talking about. They'll find out, all right. We're standing together.
Henry White, you've been drinking.
Well, what if
you
I...
You march right into the bathroom and wash up. You've held up dinner as it is for over 20 minutes. What you need is a good bowl of hot soup.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. Of course, another thing Henry needs is to get a good grip on the green devil inside him and tell it to drop dead. But Henry is in no condition to do that now. Over dinner, he just keeps saying things like,
Next thing you know, they'll be moving right into our backyard and living there.
Well, who will, Henry?
Everybody. Why don't they go back where they belong? No brains. Bad blood.
Henry.
Give your green devil a chance. Just give him a little leeway and he'll be all over you, putting new ideas in your head, suggesting new ways to hate more people. By the time dinner was over that Friday night, Henry had reached his green devil's logical conclusion.
Different. Can't have different people around all the time. Won't have them moving in and living in my backyard.
All right, you're all right, just as you say. Now, come along and get in bed.
Stand together.
Oh, yes, that's right, dear. And when you wake up, you'll be all well again. 8 hours sleep, that's all you need.
Betty Bye for Henry. Sleep. Nice sleep. And his green devil. He went to sleep, too. And during the night, a most astonishing dream came to Henry. He dreamed that the whole world had become so small that it could all fit into his backyard and all kinds of different people were living there. And at first he was very curious and very interested.
Now, how about that? Not bad, huh? For just one little backyard?
And then he ran into two people who seemed to have a familiar look.
Hello.
Hello. Who are you?
I'm Henry White. Who are you?
I'm Henry Black. Who are you?
I'm Henry Brown.
How do you do?
How do you do?
How do you do?
Henry, Henry, who was white, had a funny dream one night. In his backyard, when he looked out there, he found folks living from everywhere. African, Irish, Mexican, Jew. Henry said, how do you do? How do you do? How do you do? Henry said, how do you do? Old green devil by his side. Devil said, will your race pride let you say how do? To all these folks who are not like you. African, Chinese, Mexicans all wanted to pay a friendly call. But they're old green devils, they whispered low. Henry's another race, you know. Each green devil in each ear whispered hate and whispered fear. Each green devil took delight in stirring up these folks to fight.
You're black.
You're brown.
You're white.
You got a round head.
You got a flat head.
You got a skinny head.
Your nose is thick.
Your nose is sharp.
I got no nose at all.
I hate black folks.
I hate brown folks.
I hate white folks.
I'm gonna lick you.
I'd like to see you start it.
Cross that line.
Knock this chip off.
Dashed you.
Double dashed you.
All right, you at you.
Hey, hey, toe for flunking. Toe for flunking. Toe for flunking. I'm waiting.
Henry. Henry, wake up.
What's the matter? What's going on?
You were having a nightmare.
I guess so.
Was Henry all right? He lay in bed for quite a spell after his wife had waked him up, thinking about his dream.
Funny. The world's so small, it was in my backyard.
All those people.
Henry was awake and thinking, but his green devil was still asleep. Henry finally went to sleep again, but he was troubled by his strange dream, wasn't sure why he'd had such a dream. Decided he didn't like it at all. But he didn't know what to do about it. Well, next morning...
Gee. Golly.
What now?
I must have put on quite an act last night.
You were noticeable.
I bet I was. Hey, what happened to the lamp?
You broke it. Kicked the umbrella stand and knocked the lamp right off the table.
Oh, boy. Sure smashed it. You think it could be fixed?
Maybe. Some of that, what do you call it, that special glue that they used to have?
Oh, we got any around the house?
Now, listen, Henry. Don't you start fussing around trying to fix that lamp. If it's possible to fix it, it won't be after you get through with it.
Well, I like that.
Oh, darling, do me a favor. Let it alone. I'll get a man to come in and fix it.
A man? What man?
Well, there's a man opened up a repair shop down the block just a couple weeks ago. Fixed Mrs. Bascom's china platter so you'd never notice it was broken. I'll get him to come over.
Well, if you're sure,
I'm sure.
And that's the way it happened. When she went out to do the weekend shopping, Mabel stopped off at the repair shop, and the man said, sure, he could come over and he'd bring the right kind of, what do you call it, to fix the lamp, if it could be fixed. So about the middle of the afternoon, when Henry was feeling much better, but still a little remorseful about the night before, and still puzzling over that dream, too, the repairman rang the bell, and Henry let him in. They both stood looking at the broken pieces for a moment.
That's it. Think you can fix it?
Yes, I think so. My, such a pretty lamp, too. Your little boy broke it, maybe?
No, I did.
Oh.
What do you mean, huh?
I meant nothing.
Oh. Mind if I look over your shoulder?
It gives you pleasure.
Well, I got nothing else to do.
So look.
You got an accent.
That is so.
You're a foreigner, maybe?
I am what you call a DP, a displaced person. I'm in America only a very short time. I was brought over by one of the American congregations of my church. You know the church around the corner?
You sure find yourself a line of work in a hurry.
It is what they say about America, isn't it? Land of opportunity.
Probably took some Americans' job away from
them. Oh, I do not think so. This little repair business, I began it myself.
Where are you from?
From Poland.
Poland, huh? There any...
Censored.
Or...
Censored.
In Poland?
Excuse me, I think I do not know what those words mean.
Any colored people. Negroes, Chinese, any people... Well, you know, different from me.
No. There are very few black-skinned or brown-skinned or yellow-skinned persons in Poland.
Say.
Yes?
You answered that question kind of funny.
Yes?
As though
perhaps I thought such people are not different from you?
Yeah.
That's right. They are not different.
Say, you blind or something? Can't you see that their skin is different? Well...
A long time ago, say back at the time of Adam and Eve...
Yes?
Everybody was the same color, light brown, say a tan color.
What?
And then the people started migrating from one place to another. Some went to Africa and lived for many generations in the sun. Some went up north, some went very far to the east. As they grew up, generation after generation, in different climates, under different conditions...
Yeah, their skins began to differ.
Yes, and this is the only difference.
Only difference. What about brains? White people have the biggest brains. Well, don't they?
Science has shown us that there are very small differences in average brain sizes. The largest average brain belongs to...
Us white people.
The Eskimos. The largest brain on record belongs to an imbecile. Bright people, like strong people, come in all colors.
Well, what about blood? There are blood differences.
Oh, that's right, sir. Four different blood types.
Oh, well then.
The types are A, B, and O. You can find all these blood types in people of every skin color.
But ye...
And chances are your blood is a different type than your wife's blood or your little boy's. Could be that if your little boy needed a transfusion, you might have to ask Mr. Black or Mr. Brown to get a transfusion, for theirs would be the right type, not yours.
Now, wait a minute. You got to admit that there are differences. White people have... they have more know-how, more inventiveness.
Not always. Brown people invented the wheel. Black people first forged iron. Yellow people invented movable type. All different colors of people got together and built civilization together. There's a tradition that the dust out of which man was fashioned came from all parts of the universe, colored red, black, white, and yellow. All men of whatever race, creed, or color have an equal right to the bounties of the world, for all are descended from Adam.
Say, how come you know so much about all this?
Oh, in Krakow, where I come from, in Poland. I was a professor at a university before the war. I was an anthropologist. This is the kind of scientist who makes a study of peoples and their customs.
Oh. And, there are really no differences? Except in skin color? Like that?
No difference. Except what environment, what conditions bring about. People think there are these differences because they are insecure. Maybe they think they will lose their job or their money or their home or their health or their friends. And because they are insecure, they look for somebody to blame and they pick out those who seem different because their skin is different or their religion is different or their language is different and blame all their troubles on them.
Insecure. Yeah.
Crowding us out of our job. Good, pure stock. We're being pushed around too much. Got to stand together.
You said something?
No. I just think he's silly. Insecure, huh? Just because we're worried and afraid.
Yeah, so the scientists tell us. But here in this country, there seems a little reason for this kind of worry. Here people can be thankful in America. Is that not why you have this holiday called Thanksgiving?
Yeah. Say.
Yes, sir. There's the lamp. All fixed, no?
You've given me an idea. Do you want to come and have Thanksgiving dinner here at this house on Thursday?
Oh, I would be honored to come.
Good. Where's my hat? Yeah,
but where are you going?
A couple of fellas I got to look up right away. In a hurry before they make any other plans. You're the guy I bumped into in the street last night, aren't you?
Yes, I remember bumping into someone, but if it was
My wife and I want you to come over to Thanksgiving dinner at our house. Will you come? You the fellow was coming into the house last night when I ran into him outside on the sidewalk?
I think that's right, yes.
Good?
What do you mean, good? I'll have you
my
know
My wife and I want you to come to Thanksgiving dinner at my house on Thursday. Here's the address. Can you be there?
Well, I,
Be there. Good. We'll be expecting you.
That's the fable. Henry White and Henry Black and Henry Brown to Thanksgiving dinner, and the new arrival in America was the real guest of honor. Somebody, I guess maybe it was Henry White, said what is the moral of this fable during the dinner. He said,
"Today, science is proving to us what religion has taught ever since the beginning of time. The Bible story of Adam and Eve. That all the peoples of the earth are one single family and have a common origin."
For all of us who have learned this truth, this is in reality the Thanksgiving season.
Now we present Mr. Charles H. Silver, outstanding civic leader and member of the Board of Overseers of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, president of Beth Israel Hospital. Mr. Silver.
In the dramatic presentation which you have just heard, Henry dreamed that the whole world has become so small that it could fit in his backyard. All kinds of different people were living there. We in this glorious country of ours give thanks for the blessings that have been bestowed on us and have made us the most powerful nation on the earth. Yet in giving voice to our gratitude, we must not forget that we are living in a world where we can reach the backyards of our neighbors in a matter of hours. For science has annihilated distance. The waters that surround us wash the shores of large and small nations. We talk to them over the telephone. We can fly to them quickly. They influence our economic and social thinking and planning. It is a world of many people speaking various languages, of diverse religious beliefs, white and black and yellow men and women and children, living in a world so closely knit that we seem to be rubbing elbows with them. We are engaged today in rebuilding this world that has been badly dislocated by the war. The little green devils of prejudice and hate and fear that afflict human beings must be eradicated if we are to have a solid peace, a world of many national backyards, with neighbors talking to each other in a spirit of amity and brotherhood. As you have just heard, basically there is no difference between people. The level of understanding, their emotions run the same direction. All people, no matter what their race, color, or creed, have an equal right to the countries of the world. And this season of Thanksgiving, let us be grateful for the bounties we in this blessed land of ours have enjoyed. Let us pray and hope that our statesmen will have the capacity for leadership to guide us through the lanes of uncertainty to a happier and calmer era. Let us give thanks that despite the most staggering problems in the history of mankind, we have not faltered, but have thrown out a challenge to those forces which would destroy our democratic way of life.
Thank you, Mr. Silver. If you would like a free copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to The Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. Our Eternal Light drama today, In Henry's Backyard, was written by Peter Lyon and was adapted from the book In Henry's Backyard by Ruth Benedict and Gene Weltfish. The music was composed by Morris Mamorski and conducted by Milton Katims. The ballad was sung by Tom Glazer and written by Langston Hughes. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Ralph Bell was featured as Henry, and the narrator was John Larkin. The entire production was under the direction of Frank Papp. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.